WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Stephanie Officer. The GOP-led House Oversight Committee today receiving new documents from the Jeffrey Epstein estate. The committee had issued a subpoena to his estate for documents, including a copy of the alleged birthday book the Wall Street Journal reported was compiled for Epstein's birthday in 2003. It contains a one-page letter with a drawing from Donald Trump. The president has denied writing the letter. ABC's Catherine Valders.
The Republican-led House Oversight Committee issued a subpoena to Jeffrey Epstein's estate. They subpoenaed the estate for the birthday book, for some financial records and other documents, and then got them returned to them today. And this letter was included in what they received. Now the letter has been posted.
A moose known as Emil appeared nearly 3 weeks ago in Austria. A Facebook fan page for him has nearly 10,000 members. Moose are not native to Austria. Emil is believed to have come from Poland. This is ABC News.
As Wisconsin is saying the word bag instead of bag, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Packers with a Week 1 win. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports from Lambeau Field, where the Packers beat the Lions 27-13. Green Bay with an early lead and never let up. Matt LaFleur on finally snapping a three-game losing streak to Detroit when they played here at Lambeau.
Kind of had their way with us the last three times here at Lambeau. I was just really proud, and I think, of the energy our guys brought, not only in the first half, but I thought we matched it to start the second half as well.
Packers quarterback Jordan Love threw for two touchdowns and 188 yards.
Obviously, I think a big goal for us was to be able to come in here and start the season off fast and start the season on the right note. So to come in here week one at home and get a dominant win like that is amazing and exactly what we've been working for. So feels great.
Now a short week. The Packers host the Washington Commanders this Thursday night. Baseball, Brewers with a win in Pittsburgh, 10-2. Jacob Mizorowski pitched seven innings and got the win with Sports on Mike Clemens.
School sports are played by humans, coached by humans, and officiated by humans. So the next time you're sitting in the stands at a school athletic event, please remember this and maintain your humanity, especially when it comes to judging and critiquing athletes, coaches, and officials. Please show your fellow humans some respect. They'll appreciate your empathy.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. So much winning. So much winning going on. Friday, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the new person, because they fired the last one that came out with bad numbers. Worse than the one that got someone fired. Only 22,000 jobs added in the month of August. Meaning that the labor market is dead. They said stalled, but since Liberation Day, flat, just beep, deadline. And so what we get then is not, hey, how do we fix this? We double down, because the tariffs evidently are working wonderfully. Just ask the Commerce Secretary, who again doubled down on the fact that, you know, Goldman Sachs is saying 86% of the tariffs were paid by consumers, which they are. As someone who believes that tariffs are part of an industrial package, I understand that, yeah, they do raise prices some, and they are paid by consumers, absolutely, because it's just passed along. But to deny that, well, you know, we'll see. But what did we get from the Trump administration over the weekend was some really good distraction, some good truth socialing, some true this. And the one that caught my attention was, I don't know if you caught it last week, but China invited Russia and India and North Korea to come watch their big their big military parade where they showcased some new weapons and, you know, basically the kind of phallic, you know what, waving or swinging of the male appendage, if you will. And it was like a little dictator get together, of which Trump evidently wasn't invited. I guess he was kind of maybe put, I don't know, put off, but he put out on Truth Social that looks like we've lost India and Russia to deepest, darkest China. And then he adds, may they have a long and prosperous future together, which is weird. Now, you had, you know, Putin and the Indian Prime Minister Modi and Xi Jinping of China, you know, with a picture that he put out, an old one from before. But there it was. And it made me go, yeah, I'm still kind of wondering, is he trying to get into the club? Is he trying to become part of the authoritarian little club? And they're shunning him? Because if you remember, there was some idea that he may go to the big parade. I can't imagine why an American president would even consider it. But hey, now of the big parade, he said he thought it was very, very impressive. He said, but I understood the reason they were doing it. I don't think he does. And they were hoping I was watching, and I was watching. Because he was watching, hoping they would invite him, I think. And this is the sad reality of our paper tough guy. Now, he claims he has a very good relationship with all of them. You know, they've got great relationships. Now, remember, he was supposed to, day one, end the war in Ukraine. That ain't happening. Now is talking about phase two. I didn't really know there was a phase one. And then maybe a phase three, which we don't know what phase two is. This is what happens when you don't have a president who really understands strategy. And when you have a spaghetti theory president, we're just going to throw a bunch of you-know-what against the wall and maybe something works. And while he's trying to figure out his path in the darkness, you still have Russia who is pushing their disinformation campaigns, even though we're shutting down any of the operation to stop it, they're stepping it up. Now, again, the right wing is doing a masterful job saying it's all Russian hoax. Russia wouldn't do any of those things because we believe in them. But the reality is they aren't stopping. They're doing more. And at this point, it's helping Trump. But what happens when they flip that script on him? You know, what if he does decide, I want to stop the war in Ukraine because I really do want that Nobel Peace Prize. He's fixated on getting the Nobel Peace Prize, of which I don't know, turning the Defense Department into the Department of War, I don't know that gets you the Peace Prize. And I also don't know, and this is one of those weird moments, maybe I'm just strange, but I don't know if going on Truth Social and posting a meme that basically is the poster of the 1979 Vietnam War dystopia Apocalypse Now. You know, where the guy goes, I love the smell of napalm in the morning. Well, he did the helicopters flying with the weird costume with him adorned in, with the I love the smell of deportations in the morning. And he goes on to say that, you know, basically that Chicago, they're going to find out. And it's one of those weird things where you go, Chicago's about to find out why they call it the Department of War with this weird, bizarre, you know, movie poster of him with a giant head on a small body. It's a weird thing. And I got to be honest, I expect this kind of thing from childish thing from him, but it got me thinking about, you know, all of the rhetoric around, you know, we're going to send troops into American cities, and an American should be freaked out by this. I mean, you go back, you know, to June. June 7th, you know, Trump announced he was going to federalize 2,000 National Guard troops, send them into Chicago. On the 10th, warned publicly that anyone protesting at his military parade, at his little phallic waving, they were going to face strong measures, very big force. and he called the folks who went out to demonstrate, called them individuals who despise our nation. Now remember, this is a country that in your constitution, folks, you have the right to peaceably assemble and address your grievances to your government. You have the right to protest. It is like the American, it's the American thing. It's what our country was built on. But according to him, anyone who protests him, they hate the country, and we're gonna crush them. Also on June 10th, remarks about Los Angeles claim that deploying the National Guard and the Marines is needed to react to protests because we got to put that stuff down. On the 11th, said his administration was pushing the National Guard troops in there, going to protect federal property because, you know, those protesters, you know, kind of, they're justifying putting military personnel on the ground because people carrying paper signs were somehow going to tear down federal buildings. Over the summer, sent the National Guards into Los Angeles because of the protests, of course. Now, a judge on September 1st ruled it illegal because it breached posse comitatus. And those of us who aren't lawyers already knew that. July 2nd, he invoked federal authorities to use the National Guard to temporarily protect ICE because they were having government immigration raids. In August, they deployed the National Guard to Washington, D.C., going to keep the streets safe, enforce federal law. August 29th, threatened to deploy the National Guard to Chicago, New York, Seattle, Baltimore, San Francisco. You know why? Fight crime. We're going to fight crime. Even though in all of those places, crime rates are down. August 24th, again, we're going to send troops to Baltimore, San Francisco, New York. Crime. Crime's up. We got to fight the crime. September 5th, states that going into Chicago. I didn't say when we're going in. When you lose, look. He says, I have an obligation. This isn't a political thing. I have an obligation. Is that what this is? We're going to use military personnel against American citizens because he's got an obligation. And again, on the 5th, he comes out and says they're going to learn why it's called the War Department, our Apocalypse Now thing. And then on the 6th, he kind of walks it back. Well, you know, we're not going to war. No, we're going to clean up our cities. So I guess we're going to send in the National Guard with the orange vests, and they're going to get garbage bags to be able to clean up the streets. That's what it is. So now, as I understand it, we're gonna send troops currently deployed into Washington, D.C. They had some in Los Angeles, going to Chicago, Baltimore's on the list, New York, Oakland, San Francisco, New Orleans, oddly enough, and I guess now Portland, because I guess he claims Portland is what was the quote about sending in, you know, the it's like living in hell. Because people are protesting there, who he called not protesters, but paid terrorists and paid agitators. And this is, again, one of those things that very telling in the language that they use, because it's what they do. It's like my mother always said, if someone's pointing their finger at you, they got three more pointing back at them. They know it because they're doing it. Now, according to him, he said, we're going to be able to stop that very easily, the protests going on in Portland. And if we go to Portland, we're going to wipe them out. They're going to be gone. They've ruined the city. What they've done to that place, it's like living in hell. The Portland mayor, you know, said, no, that's not accurate. Don't need any federal intervention. The Oregon Attorney General, they're moving on legal action. But understand, it's not going to matter. Because this isn't about protecting people. This is about crushing dissent. This is about ensuring that anyone who comes out, like in any authoritarian regime, if you speak out, you are dealt with. And this is how our authoritarian leader, this is how our guy does things. Now, also over the weekend, one of the weird things, because everything's about distraction and deflection. Everything's about changing the narrative. Everything's about making sure that, you know, the job numbers, nobody really knows about. It's about changing the news cycle, which, you know, understand, the news cycle changes 15 times a day with this guy because he's a master. Honestly and truthfully, got to give credit where credit is due. Understands media, understands how to manipulate and to change the narratives. And Mike Johnson tried. Because if you noticed over the weekend, dropped kind of a political bombshell. I would argue the political bombshell of the century. And got me scratching my head. Because apparently, according to Mike Johnson, Donald Trump was an FBI informant. And you go, no, this isn't just a plot twist on one of those late night comedy sketch shows. No, no. It's real life incredulity. It really is. It's as believable as Elvis running stings from his UFO. It's as believable as, you know, Bigfoot doing double duty as a DEA agent or Taylor Swift hacking satellites between, you know, stadium shows. And I look at Johnson's logic, which kind of is a masterclass on how to mislead with a straight face. On live TV, he confidently declared that when Donald Trump first heard about the rumors about Jeffrey Epstein, he threw Epstein out of Mar-a-Lago and then did what any billionaire would do. Immediately picked up the phone, reached out to the feds, and became a snitch. Yeah, he did. He became a snitch. Because we all know Trump, the paragon of decency and chivalry and family values. You know, the guy who said he'd be dating his daughter or grabbing women by the you-know-where and the you-know-what. Or just moving on them, women, you know, like what they are. You know, we really know he cares about the women and children. So, of course, he picked up the phone and called the proper authorities. It's crazy, but it's what I guess Mike Johnson was trying to peddle. And, you know, as I was watching this, I'm going, wow, I can almost hear my QAnon enthusiast friends. I can almost hear their heads exploding. South Park writers are sharpening their pencils with glee. And real honest FBI agents are feeling like maybe a career change is in order. So I started thinking about it. I go, you know, Trump, an FBI agent. You know, that'd be like, you know, labeling Gordon Ramsay as the head chef at Olive Garden. It's possible, but really not plausible. And guaranteed to cause at least one meltdown. And here's the weird part. And wait for it, because this is the cherry on the absurdity. Johnson, immediately after speaking this, backpedaled. Leaving everyone from Trump's team to journalists to maybe even Elvis himself scratching their heads wondering, did Trump get told about this FBI thing? Is this an official narrative? Because the last time someone made headlines for Trump, Trump insisted that he didn't know who that person was. So welcome to government American style. Now with 500% more plot twists than any Marvel movie. Because it's not about making your life better. It's about infotainment. And this is one of those weird kind of moments where, you know, my mind just goes, can't we do better? And then, you know, Trump is an FBI agent. That's an interesting, maybe that could be a Netflix series. If you were able to forget all of the weird, crazy, bizarre stuff that he has said and done over the years. I mean, you go back to the 80s, you know, lots of media appearances where he's objectifying women and you know, locker room talk. The 2005 Access Hollywood tape, grabbing women by the you-know-what and saying, you know, they'll let you do anything when you're us. You know, you can go down the list, you know, insulting Heidi Klum, twice accused of sexual assault during the campaign in 16. Again, you know, when the Access Hollywood leaked, it was just locker talk. You go down the list of all of this stuff. And it's the list is long. And then the weird things that he said about his own daughter. The list is long. Now the narrative is he's an FBI agent. He's a turned snitch. I don't know that Trump was involved in. Maybe this is one of those 3 a.m. thoughts. And then I thought, you know, maybe Trump was so bad. Maybe it was Epstein who was the informant. You know, maybe Epstein was killed not by Hillary, but by Donald, because Donald's name's in those files. And immediately after reading that, I saw a story about of Democrats asking why Hillary lost, or I mean, why Kamala Harris lost. And I'm going, oh, we're in such bad shape. And the question then I come back to, and this is where I need some help. Who's going to step forward and lead in this moment? Who are the leaders in this moment? And what's the message? Because I fear I'm not seeing it. And with all of the chaos that's coming out of this administration, all of the insanity that's coming out of this administration, and the reality that the economy is crashing, jobs are stopped. The job growth is had 2 consecutive months like Trump just had during the Biden years. Our media would be doing backflips every day, calling for someone's head. And yet, it's just Monday. The story that gets attention is Donald Trump's a former FBI informant. He was going to he was on the plane to check up. You know, he was checking out Miss Teen USA, you know, to report back. He was saying he'd be dating his daughter if she weren't his, you know, because that's what FBI informants do. While the economy is stalling, while prices are still high, while real honest, hardworking Americans are still struggling to make ends meet. This is what our government is doing. This is what the Trump-led government is doing in this country. And the question is when do we rise up? Where are my red hats realizing that you got sold a bill of goods? I want to hear your thoughts. Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So again, I come back to who's going to be the leader? Who's going to step forward and move folks from the darkness? And look, I've gotten a couple of emails from people going, Rick, you keep calling on people to rise up and we don't need leaders. And look, I do believe politicians are tools. I do believe they're there to do what we want them to do, but I do think you have to have someone who's going, hey, I've got an idea. How about all of you guys come along and we'll work on this idea together? I do think you need that. You need that representative to go, I'll be the guy. But ultimately having the will of the people behind them. This government, the Trump government, I gotta wonder if you're polling. I don't think you're getting the majority. And look, you know, Democrats are trying to figure it out. Evidently, the latest idea coming out of the Democratic brain trust is a mini convention before the 26 midterms, which I'm not entirely opposed to. I'm not entirely opposed to getting people together and brainstorming and maybe a place that we're going to go and be able to interview folks and then mock how they're eating each other. Because I fear a mini convention with the current structure of the Democratic Party will simply be a giant pie fight, because everyone's going to be jockeying to be the guy or girl or whatever in 2028. And it's not, I don't think it's going to be about what they think it's going to be about. I hope I'm wrong. I hope it's the greatest fundraising thing that gets them the ability to get candidates to run in every congressional seat and every Senate race across this country and be competitive and run on ideas and thoughts and how we're going to make life better. But I fear not. Trump has already taken the idea, and they're gonna have a mini convention of their own, which will just be a big Trump rally, and it won't be the kind of pie fight that I think Democrats will have, because Democrats don't do the kind of promotion that Republicans do. They don't do it well. And I look at the fact that, the New York Times just ran a story about Trump taking credit for Biden's infrastructure law. And I had said this about a month and a half ago, that up just north of us, a project that was funded by the infrastructure bill Biden signed has a sign now that has Donald Trump's name on it. This project brought to you by the infrastructure bill, Donald Trump president. And you go, wait a second, that Biden did that. Where's the giant 20-foot Biden pointing at the road going, I did that? Oh, that's right. They didn't do any of that. So when Josh Shapiro got the bridge fixed in Philadelphia and did a great job of going, hey, look at what we're doing. Hey, let's put a video camera on that so people can see it. Hey, let's promote the fact that we're doing it. I go, that's smart. It's what you should have done. Because right now you've got people who are telling me that Trump's rebuilding our infrastructure, when in fact they're actually pulling money out of the bill. They're actually stopping programs. They're actually harming jobs. And every time I hear some idiot go, Biden stopped the Keystone XL, I go, what about Revolution Wind? When do I hear you with the same kind of outrage? Because it's multiples of the job loss. When do I get that? If it really is about the jobs, if you really care about those jobs, Revolution Wind should outrage you 100 times. All of the factory jobs that are being shuttered right now because we're undoing the investments in battery tech and clean energy should make you lose your minds. But it's not about that, because you were force-fed the anger of, Biden killed our oil. Because my problem with the Keystone XL pipeline is that, not that I'm anti-oil so much as it wasn't going to help us. You may have gotten my support. You said, yeah, we're going to take that oil, the dirty, nasty stuff, and we're going to build a refinery in Chicago. And we're going to then keep it in the country. It can't leave the country. Gas is going to be $1 a gallon. You may have gotten my support. It benefits us. I mean, if we're going to have all the external cost of destroying the environment, destroying our water, destroying the planet, at least we should enjoy the party, no? And I know my climate friends are going to lose their minds, and I'm going to get lots of emails. I'm not saying I was in favor of it. But had you made the argument, going to make our lives better, it would have been an easier sell, an easier pill to swallow. And yet, they didn't do that. And when you tell people that the Keystone pipeline is working as it always has been, in fact, at full capacity, they look at you like they have a third head, because they thought they were building a pipeline. There's already a pipeline. This was a shortcut. It was just a cutoff. It was a way to get the nasty, dirtiest oil on the planet into the system. The Keystone pipeline's working. It's the XL one that they canceled. About 200 jobs, from what I'm told. And look, those 200 families, I feel for. But the thousands that are lost because of this Revolution Wind, that's 80% done. all funded, all permitted, just a couple million hours of work put into it and getting nothing. Where's the outrage? Where's the if you're angry about it, Keystone XL, where's the outrage? I want to hear it. The sad reality is Republicans do outrage much better than Democrats do. They do PR much better than Democrats do. They do division much better because it's easier. As my grandfather always said, any idiot with a hammer can tear down a house. It takes a craftsman to build one. We've got a bunch of idiots on the Republican side tearing down the house. We need a couple of craftsmen on the Democratic side to help us build. And if a mini convention's it, that's what I'd like to see. Want to hear your thoughts? Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Right back.
You're listening to Lake Air WLAK, Amory's home for Matt and Air on Air.
As Wisconsin is cheering on the Brew Crew. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. After the chilly temperatures as of late, warmer readings are on the way this week. Some showers and storms late tonight and into tomorrow. A low tonight close to 60, high low 70s tomorrow. Highs climb up into the 80s by the later part of the week. Currently, it's 66.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Dan Marcus is here. One of the snacks Dan likes, called Sen-Sen.
Kind of tart and sour.
The packaging is not great. I understand it's very old, but like you got, it's like a toffee fay or something. Like
it's like eating candy flavored charcoal.
Okay.
I am looking on Google and these packages that I'm looking at are...
Conrad likes to look at packages on Google.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, Chicago's about ready to find out. And the question I have is, how's the rest of the world looking at this? It's quite remarkable. I mean, you know, Apocalypse Now was just a movie in 1979. We're now evidently going to live that here now in this day and age. Interesting times. And here to share some thoughts on those interesting times, I've asked my good friend John Logan to come share some thoughts with us. John is the director of the Labor and Employment Studies Program there at the San Francisco State University. He's also a professor. John, thanks for taking time for us.
Glad to be on, Rick. Thank you.
So, Chicago's about ready to find out.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's crazy, as you said. I mean, like, you know, from the post that Trump had on, I don't know if it was X or Truth Social with the Apocalypse Now reference, you know, you think, oh my God, you know, this is all kind of a joke, a game for them. This is the memification of fascism, you know? And yet, of course, it's deadly serious, because what they're going to be doing is what they did in LA, except probably even more so, even more intensely. They're going to be, you know, engaging in these workplace immigration raids, which we saw even at that Hyundai plant in Georgia the other day, and we've been seeing around the country. And, you know, the object is to strike terror into not just, I mean, primarily, of course, undocumented workers, immigrant workers, even, you know, those here legally, their families, their communities. But ultimately, as you know, it's to strike fear and terror amongst anyone who opposes this administration.
No, look, you know, Portland wasn't on the list, as I said a moment ago. Portland wasn't on the list. Now Portland's on the list.
Yeah. And so, you know, for the labor movement, you know, I mean, we've talked about this, and, you know, people, and it's very easy to criticize because, you know, they seem to be at a loss as to what exactly they should be doing to resist the Trump administration. Now, we know part of that is that they are internally divided. You know, if you know what I hear from AFL executive committee meetings, you know, when the presidents of the unions get together, you know, some of them, the unions want to be at the forefront of, you know, fighting fascism and saving democracy. Other unions, and you know, quite a large number of them, and representing millions of union members, are sort of saying, well, hold on a minute. You know, most of our members voted for this guy. We got to be careful in what we say. You know, so you've got those divisions within the labor movement.
Right. And there's also, John, the idea of if I just be quiet, maybe they won't notice me now.
That's right. Just keep our heads down, hope that we don't become the focus of the attacks. And in a way, of course, that's understandable. You know, when it's universities, when it's university presidents, I mean, it's cowardice even then. I mean, you have to call it what it is. It is cowardice. But when you're talking about union presidents and leaders of the labor movement, that you know, this is your moment. This is the time we need strong leadership. You know, this is the time we need bravery from the labor movement. And we have seen some instances of that. You know, I mean, as you know, when they had the ICE workplace raids in Los Angeles, which was the first target, they started off in the garment industry in downtown LA, which is a very heavily immigrant neighborhood. And, you know, there's lots of immigrant and undocumented workers working in the garment industry. I mean, really, really crappy jobs. And David Huerta, the head of SEIU in California, was arrested and went to jail and came out and, you know, is still waiting to be charged with a felony. But we need the entire labor movement, you know, showing that type of bravery and that type of unity in the face of this authoritarian threat, because otherwise we are totally sunk. Yeah. You know, I mean, we don't know if resisting this type of, you know, authoritarian takeover is going to be successful. But we do know that you know, they talk about obeying in advance, but you know, obeying in any way, or just keeping your head down, as you said, that's not going to work with those people.
No, you know? And look, this is all a bit of a major victory for Trump and for the Republicans, who have for pretty much my entire lifetime attacked organized labor and sought to make it almost illegal to be a union member. But, you know, I look at my own union, the Teamsters. I look at Sean O'Brien, and I question whether did he get what he wanted out of the political capital that he spent to get behind Trump. The thumbs up picture, the thumbs up picture with Lori Chavez de Reamer. Did you get everything you wanted out of this? And was it worth it for the membership? Because, again, you're dividing your union. Yes. And the movement as well. And if the movement's eating themselves, they're not going after employers. They're not going after saving democracy. And they're certainly not going after Trump.
No. But they're also not really speaking up against Sean O'Brien. I mean, you know, when O'Brien came in to head the Teamsters, I mean, we talked about this. And initially, I was very supportive. You know, I thought this guy has breathed new life into
I voted for him.
Yeah. Now, the thing with the, you know, we don't want to go over all the Savoy Grand, but you even speaking at the RNC convention, which I think was a mistake, but, you know, he did it and he said, you know, along with some bad things about, you know, praising people like Holly and Vance, he said some good things. And if he had come out after that and said, look, you know, I tried to work with the Republicans. I tried to give them a chance. You know, I talked at the convention. I spoke to them. But it's hopeless. You just can't work with these people. This is the party of the billionaires, not the party of the workers. It's always going to be the party of the billionaires. If he had said that, you know,
I think
it would be a powerful statement.
Yep.
And I'd say, yeah. You know, I was skeptical, but, you know, he said his piece at the convention and then he told the truth afterwards. And, you know, but as you know, again, Rick, I know you know this, the problem goes beyond Sean O'Brien.
Absolutely.
He may be the most clearly outspoken out there, you know, interviewing conservative, you know, YouTubers on his podcast and, you know, cozying up with Josh Hawley, the right-wing senator from Missouri, who has taken a few pro-labor positions. But there are other leaders in the labor movement, in the building trades, in, you know, the firefighters, in a whole host of, you know, particularly unions that represent blue-collar workers, not exclusively, but, you know, it's especially a problem there. And they have been either, you know, saying things that are supportive of aspects of Trump's agenda, even saying things that are supportive of his immigration agenda. And it's just, you know, they don't seem to see the danger of doing that. You know, this...
And that's why I brought up Chicago, John. You know, the reason I brought up Chicago is Chicago's a union town.
Yeah,
a lot of the towns on that list that he's going to go into, those are places where there are a lot of union members there.
It is. And, you know, Rick, again, without sort of engaging in sort of hyperbole, and it's only a matter of time before something goes horribly wrong in you know, one of these. I mean, it already has. You know, people have already died in ICE detention centers. People have been disappeared with no due process. Union members have been disappeared with no due process. People have never committed any crimes who, you know, contribute to the economy of this country have been treated like violent criminals, you know, outside of Home Depots, in, you know, car factories, in, you know, farming facilities in California. But it is inevitably going to go much worse. You know, there's going to get a point where, you know, God forbid, but, you know, some of these ICE or other people are going to open fire on protesters or something of that nature, you know. And we can't say we didn't see it coming.
No. You're right.
I mean, and it's the same with the, like, you know, the authoritarian takeover of the country. You know, we were talking, like, you know, several years down the line, and, you know, Trump's authoritarian takeover had been a complete success, and he had destroyed the labor movement as we know it. We were talking about this before, like, say, in 4 years' time, we have a labor movement that's sort of, like, you know, barely on life support. It's much diminished from where it is even today, and it's divided politically. You know, some of it's still supporting Trump, some of it's just trying to lay low, others are still trying to, like, speak out against what's happening, but it's a sort of shadow of its former self. And, you know, he's destroyed all of these other institutions, universities, public education, and all the rest of it. You know, again, we can't say we didn't see it coming, because what has happened in these first few months is exactly what we would expect if that were the ultimate goal.
So let me ask you the question then, because, you know, I've asked a number of people, is it as bad as you thought it was going to be? Because people are shocked when I go, no, this is exactly what I talked about all last year. Yeah. I said it was going to be this bad. In fact, thought it would be a little quicker. I mean, the pace has been fairly quick. Actually, I thought it was going to be a lot quicker than where we'd be worse off today than we actually are. And people are like, no, you can't. No, if you would have paid attention, maybe you would have. So let me ask you that question.
Yeah.
Are you surprised where we are?
Yeah, no, not at all. And you're absolutely right. I mean, if people do pay attention, if they read what's coming out of places like the Heritage Foundation. And it was the same, by the way, before Scott Walker got elected as governor of Wisconsin in 2010. What he did to public sector workers in Wisconsin, and then what was repeated in multiple other states across the country, it was absolutely predictable. The American Legislative Exchange Council, Koch Brothers, you know, funded network, and the Heritage Foundation had been calling on Republican governors to do exactly that for the past few years. Now, this time, of course, the stakes are much, much higher. But with Project 2025, you know, they laid it out in great detail, you know, step by step by step by step. And that is what's been happening. You know, of course, Trump, you know, had this bullshit line saying, I don't know anything about that. I've never read that. You know, he probably hadn't read it. But that is the playbook that his government is using. You know, in many ways, you know, the labor movement is the canary in the coal mine for the authoritarian takeover of the United States. What they're doing to federal workers right now, to their unions, and they know, I mean, there are smart people in there. They know that, like, oh, a lot of the country, they don't even understand what these federal workers do.
Right.
And they don't particularly sympathize with them. And they probably think the federal bureaucracy is too large and that we have too many federal employees who do God knows what. I mean, that's not the truth. I mean, the truth is most of these people do absolutely essential jobs that we rely upon for safe food, for clean water, for clean air, for vaccines, for, you know, God knows what. However, they knew that if they first started with the federal workers, decimated collective bargaining rights for up to a million federal workers, you know, that would weaken the resistance to their authoritarian takeover. And as I said, like in many ways, you know, if you're a progressive out there and you're on the outlook for signs of a fascist takeover, you know, look at what Trump is doing to the labor movement.
Yep. Well, what was Pastor Niemöller's quote? The poem, you know, first they came for the socialists, yeah, and yeah, I said nothing. Yeah, then yeah, they came for the trade unionists.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And then yeah, they came for the Jews.
Yeah, yes, yeah. So, I mean, you know, you look at the labor movement, like different problems as we're talking about. First, the federal workers, and he won't stop there. You know, he will start to go after the public sector workers next, and, you know, won't save them just because, you know, we think, oh, public sector bargaining, that's a state issue. And if you're a public sector worker in California or in Illinois or in New York or New Jersey or Washington, you're going to be safe. You're not going to be safe. They're going to go after the teachers' unions, you know, particularly their political contributions. They want to destroy the teachers' unions for a variety of reasons. But, you know, they want to do away with, you know, K through 12 public schools as they currently exist. They want to destroy higher education as it currently exists, and the unions are an obstacle where they exist, and higher education unions are an obstacle to that. So that, and what that shows, and I know this is obvious, but like when you think about it, you know, Trump, at the stroke of a pen, he signed an executive order in March. You know, courts have gone both ways, but they're pathetic. You know, they've mostly agreed with them. You know, even if it is unlawful retaliation against the American Federation of Government Employees, the main union of federal workers, it's still allowed under national security justification, which was his totally frivolous, you know, like as if EPA, you know, workers are in any way involved in national security issues. We know it's our VA workers. We know it's a joke. Anyway, so that was justification. He's going to get away with it. But what it shows is that, you know, labor movement today, as you know, under 10%, under 6% in the private sector, that's where we were 100 years ago. But 100 years ago, unions had a much more stable base. They were much more resilient. They were used to dealing with hostile courts, hostile federal governments, hostile state governments. And, you know, they were mostly based in the trades. Not exclusively, but mostly based in the trades. So if you look at the foundations of the labor movement today, it's far less resilient than it was 100 years ago. The fact that Trump can do this, he can destroy collective bargaining rights for almost a million workers with the stroke of a pen, and there's almost no fight back.
No.
Almost none whatsoever.
The AFL-CIO did drive a bus around, though.
Yeah, they did drive a bus around. And I, you know, someone posted this on Facebook, and I just, you know, I know it's easy to criticize, but I said, wow, that's a blast from the past. You know, I thought union tour buses were something that disappeared in the 1980s. I mean, genuinely, it sort of seems that we're still playing by the rules. And we're still, you know, when the other side has like doesn't give a shit about the rules. You know, they don't care about the law, the Constitution, the separation of powers. They don't care about due process. They don't care about everything. And what is our side doing? It's mobilizing for the midterms. It's taking the government to court. It, you know, has a tour bus. And, you know, it just seems that we're sort of like incapable of facing up to the gravity of the, and it is, you know, like when you think about it, so I think, wow, we really are facing an existential threat right now. And we're not really, you know, union presidents like university presidents who are at war with Trump, they're not really equipped to deal with this situation. No one ever told them they were going to have to fight the entire apparatus of the federal government, you know? But this is what they have to do. This is the moment that we're in, and they have to do it together, and they have to, you know, do it in a way that, you know, shows more fight.
Yeah, so last question I've got for you then, because, you know, there's a lot of ideas being bounced around. I know that Ben Sachs and, you know, Sharon Block came out with a piece on Labor Day saying, hey, we need to push for the PRO Act and sectorial bargaining and all these ideas that are great ideas if you have the political power to enact them. But in a moment while we're being under assault and these ideas don't have a snowball's chance of passing in this moment, I get the long-term organizing goal, but what should people be doing then?
Yeah, no, it is a very good question, and it's a really, really difficult question to answer. I mean, when you think about it, the people, even now, the most depressing thing right now is like when these incredibly powerful institutions, incredibly powerful organizations just roll over to the Trump administration. And we've seen that time and time again. We've seen it with universities, we've seen it with big law firms, we've seen it with media organizations. And you think, oh my God, if these like, you know, multi-billion dollar organizations can't stand up to the Trump administration, you know, what chance do ordinary people, and yet it is ordinary people who are standing up against them, you know, to the ICE raids, you know, participating in these demonstrations. And I know just saying this doesn't make it happen. You know, this is where we need the AFL and, you know, every union in the country. You know, organizing at your workplace is a form of resisting authoritarianism. You know, there's no bigger sort of like, you know, dictatorship in America than the workplace. And so, and we see also, you know, we talk about fascism and the Ice Age and all that, but we know that behind the scenes, it's about that, but it's not really about that. It's about Trump with Zuckerman and Bezos and Musk and all of the other billionaires all being on the same page.
Yep.
And, you know, so, you know, you got to, I mean, organizing your workplace, you know, if something concrete, and again, I know that it's not, you know, we've talked many, many times, organizing is so, so difficult, and it's going to be even more difficult with this administration, but there is no alternative. Like, you know, there genuinely is no alternative. If you, you know, imagine, 2-3 years ago, if we had had a real campaign to try and organize at Tesla, you know, what difference that could have made.
Yeah.
You know, and we just, you know, like, it's about all of the really cruel and nasty and, you know, vicious things that they're doing. But it's also about the billionaires and now, you know, would-be trillionaire Elon Musk looting the country. You know, and to stop that, you just have to make sure that they don't have unilateral control of the workplace.
No, you're spot on. John, I appreciate the time. As always, great stuff. I look forward to coming back and sharing some more thoughts down the road. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Rick. Okay, bye-bye.
John Logan, professor of and director of labor and employment studies there at San Francisco State University. Want to hear your thoughts. Are you concerned that they're coming for you? And is John right? You know, is the best form of saving democracy organizing the workplace? fighting for better wages, hours, conditions, a voice, respect, dignity, all of those things we talk about. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Gonna take a quick break. Right back. Stick around.
May we take a minute to talk about your death? And mine too. I certainly don't want to rush either one, but there is a matter we should all consider ahead of the event, namely, the funeral. The nature of one's bodily disposal is, of course, unpleasant to discuss, so mostly we don't. Thus, at our death, loved ones frantically try to decide between crematorium or a coffin. Both processes are awful to contemplate, are environmentally harmful, can be exorbitantly expensive, and are often emotionally unsatisfying for survivors. I can't say that there's any good way to go, but is there a better way? Yes, says an interesting green burial movement, offering the alternative of an affordable adios that truly does bring life full circle. With no need for embalming, burning, or steel sarcophagus, it provides a simplicity and an organic authenticity to life's end. The essence of it is minimalism. The expired body is literally and gently covered with heated plant material for a month or so, accelerating the work of microbes and fungi to convert us into soil. Yes, in short order, we become about a cubic yard of compost, new, nutrient-rich earth that family or others can even spread to foster future life. Adding to the holistic ethic, a cottage industry makes available homemade woven baskets, linen shrouds, and other organic provisions for our dearly departed. Also, rather than wearing mournful black clothing to the funeral plot, mourners at a green burial gather in work clothes to assist in the farewell. This is Jim Hightower saying, it's a participatory continuum, carrying life forward. Maybe it's not for you and yours, but maybe it is. To learn more, go to greenburialcouncil.org.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I tell you, I really like John Logan. Smart guy. I wanted to get into talking about, you know, what the rest of the world's doing on the labor front. And while we're talking about what we would like to see happen, what other countries do to ensure that their workers have decent wages, hours, conditions, the ability to thrive and survive. While here at home, what's going on, what's happening to American workers is their rights are being taken away at virtually at every turn. And, you know, there's some great ideas out there. And look, we know what the ideas are. It's a matter of having the political power to get them done. And as I've been saying for a while, I think it's only going to come about through massive suffering and struggle, through the pain of the past, before we get our heads in the right space. Because the sad reality is the labor movement is in areas splintered. Trump and Holly and some Republicans have done a fairly good job of courting some union votes. And understand, you know, there are some new Republicans who don't want to destroy unions. They want to co-opt them. They want to take them over. Because understand, you know, Hitler had a very strong union backing. Everybody was in the Nazi Union. Just like China, they got a lot of union members there. Problem is, they're not independent and they're not fighting for democracy. They're just getting, well, a little something. And this is where my hope for Sean O'Brien in this moment, the guy that I voted for, that guy I think would have thrived in this moment. That guy I think would have done great work. I'm not sure what we've got now, though. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Tell me what you think. And what do you see? You know, is there a future for the labor movement in this country? Union approval at an all-time high, but the law's kind of broken. I want to hear your thoughts. rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program? Grab the podcast. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Stephanie Officer. The GOP-led House Oversight Committee today receiving new documents from the Jeffrey Epstein estate. The committee had issued a subpoena to his estate for documents, including a copy of the alleged birthday book the Wall Street Journal reported was compiled for Epstein's birthday in 2003. It contains a one-page letter with a drawing from Donald Trump. The president has denied writing the letter. ABC's Catherine Valders.
The Republican-led House Oversight Committee issued a subpoena to Jeffrey Epstein's estate. They subpoenaed the estate for the birthday book, for some financial records and other documents, and then got them returned to them today. And this letter was included in what they received. Now, the letter has been posted.
A moose known as Emil appeared nearly 3 weeks ago in Austria. A Facebook fan page for him has nearly 10,000 members. Moose are not native to Austria. Emil is believed to have come from Poland. This is ABC News. Buyers and sellers.